Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, Ida Williams here, and welcome to Postcards from the Edge, a podcast where every week I'll be having some amazing guests on, usually joined by my mom, Gwen, and my small-time first husband, Robbie Williams. He's a bit of a limelight stealer, so I will try and keep him to a minimum for you and for me. Every episode, we'll be chatting about our Anglo-American differences, which are huge now that I am an LA girl living in the United Kingdom, with a good bit of gossip thrown in as well. So let's get on to this week's guest. Well, today I'm really excited because we have superstar comedian and semi-pro football player John Bishop on the podcast. I am really excited to welcome John. He's one of the funniest people I know, and he's better at football than Rob. So let's sit down and have a chat on Postcards from the Edge. One quick note. This episode is a bit rude and crude, with a few naughty words thrown in, so definitely not family-friendly listening. Sorry, kids.
Postcards from the Edge.
Hi, mate.
How are you? You look great. You look really
yeah, you look great.
Doesn't he look well?
Yeah, you do, yeah.
I've just got off a Peloton bike.
Me too.
Yeah. Did you?
I literally just got off a Peloton bike.
Oh, yeah.
It's fucking hard, isn't it?
I know.
Should we get all this?
Yeah, we're getting it. Wait, who do you like? What instructors do you like?
I just did one there with Matt Wilners.
Oh, well, Wilbert, he's great.
Yeah, he's really good, little American guy.
Yeah, but he's really pale.
Yeah, there's some English instructors, and they're okay, but I like the Americans because, you know, I'm still intrigued by your accent. It's still, for us, for Northern English men, the American accent is still exotic. And if you start the day with some nice-looking American woman telling you that you're brilliant because you got on the bike today, you're the guy, you got on the bike today, you're going to make it, you're going to make the day. So start any day.
That's just, I love that, because we were going to talk about accents anyway, that the American accent sounds exotic to you, because when we're going to do a Peloton, I mean, I literally got off the thing with, you know, that guy, Cody Rigsby.
Yeah, Cody's fantastic.
He's fantastic. He makes me feel like some sort of gay icon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, come on, bitch.
Come on. Live your best life.
Live it, bitch.
And then he's like, bitch, if some girl was calling my phone, you'd be done, girl. Like, just now I was...
You're out of here. You're gone.
I find myself when I'm on the ride with him, which it just was, is I'm almost like Pepe Le Pew. I'm like, yes, girl, get it. And at one point, I was in the gym doing this, and security walked by, and they can't hear anything, and I'm just doing this on the bike.
He's ace. I love him.
And then Alex Toussaint, do you like him?
Yeah, I've done some with him. Ali Love, I've done she's good. She's I haven't seen her for a bit. She's good.
She's tough.
So there's good. Some of the English ones are good. There's a lad called Matt from England as well, who's good. I don't mind him. Listen, the main thing is, it's somebody making you do it. Because, like, you know, we all have the best intentions with everything. But sometimes you need someone to say, now you've got to do it. You're going to sit here
and do it.
I'm just shouting at you.
They hold you accountable. Because like what I just did just now, I would never, ever push myself to do.
I know, but the silly thing is, they can't see you.
I know, but I think they can.
I bought into that. I don't want to let them down.
I don't want to let them down.
I'm thinking, oh my God, Ali's putting all this effort.
Exactly. She's putting so much faith into me.
I know, and she's telling me I can do it. And I can't not do it because she believes.
What about when they're like, don't give up. I know it's juicy. I see you.
I see you. Alice doesn't know. I sometimes feel like stalking them and going, oh my God, like finding Kobe.
Oh, I have. Go,
oh my God. I know you see me. You see me the first time anyone sees me. And then you look. Then you look at the top and find out 65,000 people have done that class. He hasn't seen all of us, has he?
Wait, can I just say, one of the greatest moments ever was like a year ago or 2 years ago, I specifically got on that fucking bike on my birthday and did a live ride, and I got a shout out.
Did you?
Oh, no.
I felt like King fucking Kong. They said my name. I was like, they see me. They see me. Said my name.
No,
I'm happy now. I can die happy.
Because I've thought, I don't want to shout out. I don't want, because first of all, you got to be on there live to do a shout out. And I do the recorded ones, but also it's all the names. All the names are like the people who phone up and report the traffic. You're on Radio 2 where they phone up and they go, yo, it's Billy Big Tree who said that there's a traffic delay on the M40. And it's the same people. No one just says, Fred 52 Norwich. It's all the wrong mad.
Can I ask a question? Are you? I'm not telling you to say your name on the bike,
right?
But is it? Well, I am actually. Is it your name?
Yeah. What I put, because I entered this world sort of a little bit ignorant, so I wasn't one of those people who got given a peloton or was sponsored or was inducted into it. I just saw it and thought, that's what I need, someone to talk to. Someone to talk
Mate,
to.
Mate, just
me.
Call us. It's not that bad. Call us.
and so I just did. I put John B. John B. And I might have put me year a bit or something like that, or my age, something like that. But John B. But I haven't put a picture up. So I haven't got some fancy name.
I don't have a picture.
Or a secret.
But you know what I felt? I don't know.
Have you got Ida?
No. I have a name. But this is how sad I am. Was I was like, when I would hear them call out people like Swexy and Swerving,
yeah.
I changed my name. I was like, oh, I'm so unoriginal. I need to like step up my Pelotoning game. Like I need to be a little cooler. I still second guess it. I'm still second guess it.
Can I tell you what my name would be if I was on Peloton?
What?
By the way, I feel ashamed that I've not got into this Peloton craze yet, because you're doing it, a mate of mine's doing it, and they always look, and you look right now, healthy and content. Your serotonin level is where it should be. Mm-hmm. I'm almost shamed into doing
you
it myself,
be.
But I'd like mine to be Break Like the Wind.
Because you fart so much?
I don't know how you get all that on.
I feel like we should do like a Peloton like together. We could like, I won't ask your name online.
Oh, yeah.
Let's spin together.
I know. It's funny, I was speaking to Chris Moyles because he does it. And he was saying, we'll have to try and organize to be on the same ride at the same. Because then you do that thing. Do you high five?
Yeah, high five. High five.
I don't know how to high five.
Okay, so high five.
I've got to tell you this, because there is nothing more English than the first moment a high five come up. For people who don't know what Peloton is, you're on the bike, there's a screen, and there's an instructor talking you through like a spin class. And I do the other stuff. I've done the strength classes and I'm in the rear.
They're great.
But the spin classes, you're there like that. And then a little sign comes up with a little drawing of a hand, and it's someone's name. And it means they're on the bike at the same time as you. and they just want to say hi and give you a high five. And the first time it happened, I was like, "Who the fuck is?" I'm not making friends with fucking. I'm not making friends with Ben from New Jersey.
Fuck off, Ben!
Fuck off, Ben! Why are you watching me speak right
Ben,
now?
I'm busy. No, Cody's talking to me. What do you want?
Back it up, mate. I remember the first time it happened. I was like, "Whoa." It was like there was like a peeping Tom watching me undress.
I didn't know
anyone was watching, but I only literally like maybe 2 weeks ago, which is really sad because we've had it for so long, figured out how to high five. And now I'm that geek that is constantly high five.
I don't know.
So what you do,
I don't know what to give him.
Okay, so if you, it's really easy. You know, if you see the names like on the like the chart, you know,
the leaderboard,
you just press their little insignia, you just press it and it gives them a high five.
Oh, so right.
They go boom, 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 boom. And you've high fived like 10 people.
Okay. So now that you are into Pelotoning and you know that the high fives are happening, when a high five comes your way, do you A, feel guilty for not high fiving them back?
You got a high five back.
Or B, do you actually feel invigorated and go, yeah, we're all in this together? Or C, does it really bother you? Or all of those things?
No. Now that I've realised I'm part of a community, I'm in a fellowship. We like to
You've
call it.
You've got someone to talk to now. Yeah. You've got a friend to talk to.
It is like attending a meeting. It's like, look, I'm there, and I'm just high fiving these people.
Yeah, me too.
Now I'm all for it. I just didn't know how to do it. I'm not. I don't know whether I'm bold enough or un-English enough to do it.
I'm
very happy to do it back.
See, I'd be so sort of people pleasy that whilst I was doing the ride, I'd feel guilty for not showing the love back.
Oh, I always show the love back. Yeah. I feel you like if I don't press. But here's my thing. Here's my question. Now, I know what I do, but I'm going to ask you because maybe this is an English-American divide. You know when they're talking to you and they're like, come on, like, high-five your neighbor, because, you know, like, they're in the class before quarantine.
Oh, yeah.
Or they're like, you know, like, give a shout-out. Do you, in the middle of your Peloton workout by yourself, do you clap and high-five, or do you not listen and you just, like, continue biking?
I can't even believe you've asked me that. Do I high-five imaginary people in the room?
I'll tell you why.
As it happens, I don't know.
John, I fucking high five them. I fucking high five the invisible people. That's how bad it is. They're like, come on, high five your neighbor. I'll be like, I lift up my hands, or I'll clap the mom, and they're like,
hold on. But if it's a recorded Peloton session that you're doing, there's
no one can see.
No one can see. Yeah,
that's why it's so weird that I do that. I was just wondering if John did that.
But also, what happens, because people jump on at different times, so there's always someone on a good class when you're on it.
Like it'll say here and now. It'll say here now, so it's like all the people that have taken it, and then you can be talking to people that are actually doing the class at the same time you are.
Well, I've got a question. So would you say that sometimes you're on the fitness trail and then sometimes you're off the fitness trail?
I would say sometimes you're on. You've got to get on. I mean, you make yourself. There's always little bits where you go, okay, I'll have a blowout this weekend that I'll pig out, but you've got to get back on.
But do your off periods ever get to like 2 or 3 months?
No.
Wow.
He's been like, what, how many years now?
See, what I do is I sort of, like, get addicted to something and just go, I am never going to stop doing this ever again. And then one day I get up and I go, can't be arsed. And then I don't do anything for about a year or so.
Yeah, well, I went through a bit. This is why I like the Peloton thing, because there's a discipline to getting on it. Although it is just what you said there, either those. It shows you that it's an American thing, because it encourages this communal stuff. Because when you said there, if you're in a class, if they're doing a class and there's people in front of them, they're saying high five your neighbor, you high five imaginary people. It reminds you of other people. Whereas I'm English, it just makes me feel lonely because I'm on my own. And they're all in a class and I'm here on my own. And Cody can't even see me.
Cody can always see you, John. Cody can always see you.
I see you. But I got that for that discipline thing because it wasn't last Christmas. It was the Christmas before we had scales. And it was a digital scales in kilograms.
Oh.
And so you get on it, be 85.7, something like that. And I walked on Boxing Day.
Oh.
And I stood on it, and there was four numbers.
Ooh.
Four numbers.
Oh, that hurts.
I was 100.2 kilos.
Oh, shit. That hurts.
Now, that's big. Now, for me, I weigh a lot anyway because I have officially got a heavy skeleton.
Is that a self-diagnosed?
You're heavy boned.
Me and Melanie went for a scan, a body scan. This trainer we were using once knew someone. He said, "When you go for a body scan, you'll get all of your sort of fat content that we can wear, you know, all that kind of bollocks." So we went for it. And we came out of the room, and the fella said, "You have officially got the heaviest skeleton I've ever seen."
Well, that's kind
of hold on. Was he being kind, or was it a euphemism, or have you actually? Did you go? Let me just clarify that.
I mean, listen, I've got a heavy skeleton. It doesn't excuse a lot. I think it's something like the average skeleton's 2.5 kilos. And mine's like 4, so it's not like I can excuse loads, but, and I've made those numbers up as well. But so I have got a heavy skeleton. I don't want a doctor going, "Well, actually,
four kilograms."
I always do weigh more. So even now, like just getting off the Peloton, got on. So I'm like 94.5 kilos now.
You lost it because the
pound. Yeah, but that was a while. But I float around. I always float around that bit because I'll never get down. When I was at my fittest, I was about 13 stone. I don't. What are you now, Rob?
Well,
he doesn't know because he doesn't weigh himself.
I don't weigh myself, but
no, which is
so.
Weighed themselves either. I think you can see it.
You played for Hyde, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that you were a professional footballer before comedy.
Well, semi-pro.
I'm going to say pro. I say if there's any pro in the world, you're pro.
You're better than Rob. Oh, yeah.
You're better than Rob.
Did you have to be a certain weight when you were playing semi-pro?
No. It wasn't weight then also. We're talking like 80s, 90s, wasn't it? Football was a different thing. Yeah. And, you know, and the game that I played sort of played for a year at the Vauxhall Conference, then dropped down to the Northern Premier League. So I played non-league football. And the way to describe that either is it's like football, but it's just slower. People are not as good. Some have been professional players and have been good, but the rest of us just stopped the good players playing.
Isn't it like horrible as well?
It was tougher.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, why is it tougher? Because the pay is not as good and it's grimmer? Or why is it?
No, I mean,
it's
physically,
kind of like football light to me. Why is it bad?
Well,
it
I'm guessing
physically harder.
How
physically?
Is it?
But wasn't the actual game like every game that you played? You saw it was a bit,
was it scrappier?
Like wrestling, more scrappier.
No, there was more skill involved than people gave it credit for. There's some great players, but there was also, you know, it was part of the game to get your foot in.
That's what I'm saying. So, like divisions higher, Championship, Premier League. They've got more time on the ball. Everybody knows what everybody's doing, and they can make that picture in their head, and they know what's going to happen next. A bit further down, I would suggest that it was like, you know, everybody's got a good touch, but the technique isn't as good. So
no,
they're just I've just heard that everybody gets battered every game.
Yeah, there was a lot. If you're a fancy player, there's a lot of And I was one of the players who, because I wasn't as skillful as the others, had to try and stop them. So, and, you know, but if that's like everything, though, isn't it? You know, if you take, like, your profession, you take my profession, take yours either. If you, when you're good at something, you can see it in a different way to other people seeing it. So, when, like, when I enjoy watching stand-up comedy, and I still laugh and I still enjoy it. But I can see the joins. I can see the structure. I know where it's going. And I enjoy the fact that I know it. It doesn't put me off. But you often find comedians stood at the back of the comedy store or something, watching all the comics, and they're not laughing, or certainly not laughing as much as the audience. And it's not that they're not appreciating it, it's just that they're watching it in a different way.
They're analyzing it through different. It's true. Like, yeah. With TV, I watch it through a different lens than I think I would if I wasn't in the industry. And I'm sure, like, you look at music, like the way, like, even we're listening to music, I enjoy a song in a different way than Rob enjoys it, because he's thinking about the pre-chorus, the chorus, the verse. Yeah. He's breaking it down in a different way and thinking, oh, it's too long, it's too short. You know, there's all sorts of things that go into it.
Yeah, the structure, you see a structure that other people don't see. And I think the difference with elite sports people is they're the same. They just see that little thing. And this goes across all across society.
Yeah.
And people sometimes don't always recognize the value when that skill is in a different environment. So if you're an elite sportsman, everyone goes, all right, that's your skill set. That little bit of intuition other people haven't got makes you better than them, same as a performer. But if you've got it across another way, where you've got, and we've all had it, where you go and you see a brilliant teacher who just has a great way and intuition about how to pull the best out of a kid, or a fantastic nurse who has empathy, or a carer, they're not valued in the same way, but it's that same
dimension, same circle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that same individual skill that you've got that you've applied to your job that I think can make people special.
Well, I was really impressed because you've managed to do something which I think is fascinating, is you've managed to be in that sparkle zone at that high level in two completely different careers. Do you know what I mean? Like, to go from music to acting, or acting to dancing, you know, there's a through line, but to go from football to comedy is like two completely different skill sets.
It was no league.
Okay, well, calm down.
I know.
To go from boy band to solo artist.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But I mean, if it's, let me clarify.
I know the football was not at the skill level.
It's a little bit like Robbie's solo career being karaoke and then being in a boy band.
But, you know, listen, this is a very English thing I'm going to say, because, like, I'm putting the heaps of praise, because I think it's remarkable that you were in any kind of semi-pro professional sport and then have become a huge comedian. But it is a very English thing where you're like, no, I'm not going to take that compliment. Let me just bring that down. Because I've noticed with, like, you, when you give a compliment, you have to somehow take it away a little bit, because it's almost like,
well, it's sort of like the same thing. The comedian of your stature in America that played baseball at the same level that you played football,
like, that's a big deal.
They wouldn't stop the interview to clarify
that they weren't that good. They were a bit shit.
That the level wasn't that high at all.
Yeah, like, I don't think if I was, like, interviewing Michael Jordan, let's say, and we were talking about his baseball career versus his basketball career, that Michael Jordan would go, whoa, Ida, I got to clarify something.
I've got to tell you why I'm shit.
I got to tell you why I'm a bit shit.
As English people, we do that.
This is a very English thing. I don't know. I think it's the difference on why I high-five invisible people on a Peloton bike.
Exactly.
And you shrink down and go, oh, I'm a bit lonely with
Let me ask
here.
A question. So this is what I did at the start of my relationship with Ida, which I didn't realize was,
you mean,
when I was giving a compliment to Ida, like, I'd look at her and I'd go, baby, you've got the most beautiful lips I've ever seen, which is true. But then instantly this thing kicks in where I then have to go, not bad for deflated Lilos, or whatever it is.
For a bit of a haggard bitch.
Let me, so, and then she'd be like, hold on, you just said a nice thing and then you took it away. And then it happened a few times and I sort of had to get to grips with the fact that maybe I could evolve and stop doing that. Do you still do that with your missus?
Yeah. It's
funny. And does she do it with you?
Well, I mean, me and Melanie have been together now for a very long time. And so we're at a different phase in our relationship than you, because you're still at the little kid phase, even more so now with new edition.
Are you talking about Rob?
Yeah. So we've now gone to the bit where our kids are grown up because they're looking at each other again. And that's weird, because then you do have times again and then you start going, oh, you know, I actually just like being with you. And then so we've been to that bit where I've actually said, this was about 2 weeks ago when we were talking about this whole lockdown thing. I said, I've enjoyed being at home and I've liked being with you. And I could see him out and I couldn't stop myself from saying, but I'm fucking bored now.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Like, it's not your fault I'm bored. It's your bit's good. It's just, you know, it is boring, isn't it?
She must have been so touched.
Yeah.
But you see what I mean, though. Can you notice that that's an English thing? That
you,
even with friends, you sort of give a compliment, but then you have to take it away at the same time.
Oh, 100%. But for you, I mean, I don't know the vision of your time. Now it seems you've come back to the UK more. But as an Englishman who went to LA, was that one of the attractions, that positivity? Because I've always found... I've always thought of this cross-cultural relationships where you marry somebody from a different... There's going to be loads of subtle things you don't get and don't understand. But because our exposure to American culture, we think we know Americans. And then you have a different energy to us and a different approach, particularly, you know, the Californian Americans. And
well,
so
what
would it be like waking up with somebody who smiles?
I am the sunnier one of the two of us. I definitely have to say, I am the, like, come on, we got this. I love you. Sunshine.
Yeah.
Positivity. And you've definitely got that English, like, there's part of you that just has to be a bit north of the wall and erg about things or, like, piss off.
Well, there's definitely, like, when you arrive in Los Angeles, I don't think there's a place... in England, because like London wasn't this for me, but I don't think there's a place in England where you wake up and you think something's going to happen, but you're like happy about what the something might be, instead of the something that's going to happen is I'm going to get my head kicked in.
You know what it is? I think weather's got something to do with it, because I think there's an element of negativity. It's like you can't leave the house in England without thinking you might need a coat at some point in the day. So no matter how the day starts, you think part of this day is going to be shit.
Yeah.
So, it's going to start raining on me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The joy I feel right now is going to be dampened by something else.
I do think that sort of like with the English lady, not that I'm going to throw a whole category of people under the bus, but we're sort of like a fighting nation that's always been at war with someone or something or some place. And it's grey and it's rainy. And that's ingrained in our DNA. So the English lady and the English man are sort of like battle hardy. Whether they've been in a battle or not, it's in their DNA. So when you get to California and you have this sort of energy of, hey,
come on, guys. Sunshine and love.
Anything's possible, right?
Let's have some fermented kimchi and hug.
Yeah, I've got to say, it is very, very appealing and light.
Well, how does that then play into how you decide where to bring your kids up?
That's a really good question.
No, okay. So let me tell you sort of the bad thing.
Well, we have kind of, it's interesting. I think people would assume that I would want to raise the kids in California or in the States, because that's what I'm used to. And you would want to raise them English. But actually, I found in our dynamic that it's the other way around. I'm more attracted to the English culture and you're more attracted to...
No, that's not true.
Do you not
think so? No, it's not true. The reason why I was sort of like going for the California side is because nobody knew me there. So
they still don't.
Nobody knows me there. And, you know, I could be anybody. I could just be a dad instead of Robbie Williams being a dad. I would always go for British sensibilities, you know, that's because that's where I'm from. And Los Angeles isn't America. So I'm not talking about America at all. I'm just talking about Los Angeles, which has many great things and has afforded me many opportunities. But there's some bad things there too. That's like, I didn't even know the word entitlement until I got to Los Angeles.
You're welcome.
And then I learned about this new thing where there's these kids with entitlement because of the place that they were born in and having the parents that they have and having the money that they had. I'd never seen it in my life before. And it literally made me slack-jawed the way that not all, but quite a few of the people my age behaved. It was sort of like, I don't want my kids anywhere near these kids.
Yeah.
You know, that's not everybody in Los Angeles. Lots of lovely people. But there's enough to make you go, I don't want this for my kids, you know.
Well, I think there's something like the yin to the yang, like the part of like the English culture where you're a bit like waiting for it to piss down on you and you're a bit like ready to knife someone is also the bit that gives you this like this cool sense of humor that I find. Because like one thing I've always found is I was always a bit of a square peg round hole because I'd make these kind of just dark humor jokes and no one would ever get it. And when I met Rob, it was like, wow, there's someone just as mental as me who can make these jokes. And it's like, I really appreciate in English culture, people just take the piss out of each other and they can talk on a level that's quite real and funny and dark all at the same time. Whereas in LA, if you take this piss out of someone, you actually say something ironic, they're incredibly confused. Like it could be 100 degrees outside and you go, fuck, it's cold outside. And they'll just go, what are you talking about, man? It's really hot.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, whoa. Do you know what I mean? Whereas like in England.
I did one gig I've done.
Yeah.
I actually did two because they made me do a little warm-up gig first. Then he said, okay, you can do the main room. I did one gig in the Comedy Store in LA. And it was never a plan. I just went over. This would have been about, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. And I just went over to hang out, to be honest. James had gone over doing his show. Steven was playing at LA Galaxy. I had some other mates over there. I thought, I'll go for 10 days and I'll hang out. Melanie didn't want to come, so I stayed in the Marmotte? What's it called?
Oh, the Chateau Marmotte.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite cool bonkers place.
Quite cool, but...
Bit haunted.
Not for you.
Not for you.
You should have called us.
That's not what TripAdvisor told you to do, man.
I know, exactly. I'm like, what am I doing here? It's like...
A bit wanky.
Too cool for school. So anyway, but because it stayed there, the Comedy Store was around the corner. So I didn't know. So I thought, well, this is interesting. Like you, Robbie, I thought, I can actually go and watch some comedy. And no one knows who I am. Yeah, man, and I could be on the other side of the fence for a while. So I went, watched a few gigs. I thought, oh, this is all right. And I'm mental. I mean, you know, it was like Bill Baird popped up one night and stuff like that. So I'm watching. And then somebody in the crowd got talking to me. And there was a doorman and said, oh, are you a comedian who's working here? And in the end, he said, you should come back tomorrow and speak to the manager. So I went back. Spoke to the manager. I said, look, I wouldn't mind just for me getting up and doing 10 minutes. So he said, all right, so let me do a little room to like 12 Mexicans. At least I could talk. And then said, you can do. And that was a room to 12 Mexicans. That was literally.
That's not a euphemism.
Literally. That is literally what happened. There's a little room upstairs.
The belly room.
Yeah, belly room. Then he said, right, come and do the main room. And Seth is, it seems up to do the main room. I thought, this would be all right. No, you know, I'm not bothered. So I walked on. There's a couple of English in the room, so they recognised me, but no one else in the audience. So I said, right, well, just to explain to everyone here, I am a stand-up in England, and I thought, I've got a great line. And I haven't used it for years because, you know, I've used it in England, where I just said, listen, let me explain a little bit about myself. My name's John. I've been married at that point, I think it was 22 years on and off. That was me sort of line. I've been married 22 years on and off. And I got to the point where I went, I've been married 22 years. And the audience went, woo!
That's where we're high-fiving on the bike, man.
I went, what the fuck are you laughing for? I said, you just killed the joke. And then I was trying to do another thing about my son turning 16. She said he was 16. The clap, and I'm like, and in the end, it ended up with me with the audience going, would you stop being so fucking enthusiastic? I'm used to an apathetic audience who's waiting for the situation to be made funny. They don't think life's good. They know it's shit. Just be there and stop enjoying yourself.
John, right?
That made me laugh so hard.
I was on stage and I was introducing a song, and I'd start by saying, ladies and gentlemen, I've been five years sober, and I'm 5 years sober now. And people would go like that. And then I'd wait for the applause break, and then I'd carry on talking. I remember I was doing a stadium in Australia, and I went, yeah, I'm very happy to say I'm 5 years sober. And I waited for the applause break, and it didn't come. And I just looked at the audience, and they all looked at me like I'm like puzzled. Just sort of like, why would you do that, mate? And I was like, right, okay, that's thrown me off a bit. That's Australia.
Like the 180. Yeah. Like, now, here's my question. You said when you came to LA, and I'd be interested to know, that no one understood you because of your accent when you would ask for, like, water, for example. Like, you went to, what is it, Barney's Beanery, and you'd ask, when you were in LA, but besides the comedy, did people understand when you were talking, or did they look at you like, eh?
Well, actually, I would attribute America for teaching me how to speak. And the reason I say this is when I went to university, first thing I did in the first term is I qualified as a football coach, a soccer coach, because some of my mates who were doing sports degrees were in the summer, they went over to America to coach kids football at soccer camps, and you would fly in, and it wouldn't be like a residential camp. You would be in one small town in the morning, another small town in the afternoon. And it was brilliant.
So you were touring around.
Yeah, so I did 3 years of doing that in all of the summers that I was there.
Wow.
3 years. So I'd go over and I'd spend the summer each year through university. And I managed to do everything. I mean, like, I did all of the East Coast, all the West Coast. I did, you know, little places, Delaware. I've been to all of these places that people don't go. South Carolina, spending a couple of weeks right in the middle of it. And I arrived with my Liverpool accent. And the problem with my Liverpool accent is I grew up outside of Liverpool. And so my family lived right in the middle of Liverpool. And I was born at a hospital right in the center of Liverpool called Mill Road. And then the council decided to knock all of those houses down. And so they said to the families, your house is getting knocked down. You can live in this place or that place, but you're moving. And so my family elected to go to a place called Winsford, which is these series of council estates out in Cheshire. Because if you went there, you've got a job in a factory.
Oh, they guarantee a good job if you...
Yeah,
on the chemical plants.
Wow.
No, it wasn't on the chemical plants. No, that's wrong call. There was some in there. Oh, no, there was ones in Norfolk, wasn't it, as well, yeah. But anyway, what happened? They took that, me mum and dad took that, the inside toilet, job in a factory. And so did a lot of people on the street. I mean, we shared a removal van with another family on the street.
No.
So we ended up, there was this little council estate all full of people from Liverpool living in the middle of Cheshire. So they all, and the only way about identifying themselves was through their accents. It's the same way of third generation Irish Americans, the more Irish than the Irish. So what they did is I grew up surrounded by people all trying to out-scouse each other.
So like enhanced Liverpool accents,
Everyone's accent was unbelievably thick. I remember going to Liverpool on my own for the first time to go to the match when I was 15. No one in Liverpool could understand me. I was like, "Oh, that out there! You want to fuck me? I hate you, Jeff." It was completely left curve.
Wow! And so
when I went to America, and I'm trying to teach these kids, and I've got these kids in a field in Pittsburgh looking at me, going, "And I'm going, where's your face, your face?" Get the fucking ball, fuck it, get the fucking tackle in. And so I gradually learned to slow down.
I remember when we first were starting watching.
Hold on.
What?
The thing that was glazed over there was...
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Inside toilet.
Oh, yeah.
Let me just tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
This one, right, has never had a bedroom without her own ensuite bathroom.
He takes the piss out of me for that. Honestly, he thinks I'm the fucking queen for having an ensuite bathroom my whole life.
Well, so does he now. So does he.
All my life. So let's be honest.
Would you like me to shoot the curtain to make it better?
Let's be honest. Did you marry for love or did you check out bathroom arrangements first? Did you say, is this a man? Would you have married someone who couldn't give you an ensuite?
Do you know what? I would marry you even if I had to shit in the garden, babe. I mean, it would obviously be a little less glamorous, but I would sacrifice the ensuite for you.
Inside toilet.
It blows his mind.
No, but it's now blowing my mind that it was like not even one person ago where you couldn't go for a shit in your house. Mental.
Oh, yeah. That's like me.
I've never heard inside toilet as an expression before.
And then the council had to give you a grant to build your toilet into your house. We think we're on the cutting edge of technology, of culture, of science, but my gran and me at some point had to go for a shit in the yard.
Yeah, in the yard. I remember going to my nan's. And she used to have, in the kitchen, she used to have the toilet roll so that you'd take it out, because if she left it outside in the bog, it'd get damp. I'd be useless.
I mean, that's rough. That's... I'm not going to lie. It's rough. It's tough.
It explains a lot, right?
It explains a lot why you don't like to bathe or flush, because you...
Here's another thing, right? Here's another thing. Like, bath days for us with Sunday.
Sundays.
Yeah,
and
Sunday,
like,
yeah.
I'd have... My mum would have the bath water. My sister would then have the bath water. And then I would have the bath water. Is that what happened to you and your family?
Yeah, yeah. Even now, if Melanie gets a bath, like my Melanie will get a bath instead of getting a shower. If she gets a bath, gets in and gets out, and I think it's a waste. I'll get in the bath.
We do that.
I get in the, but I get in when I don't want a bath, just so that the water's not wasted.
See, this is...
We do share bath water.
This is how my northernism, right? How bad my northernism. When Ida puts up a post on Instagram and she wants to add music to it, in my mind, I'm thinking, do you really want to spend $1.99 on that?
Oh, well, do you do this? Okay, even more. I'm sure you have nice candles in your house.
Hang on a second. Do you have to spend $1.99 to put music on Instagram?
Buy the track.
Babe, but sometimes it's your song, so chill out.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've got a minute. Melanie's doing that all the time on her Instagram. She's doing Instagram with all these pigs singing songs.
I didn't want to get Melanie.
Got a story.
Wait, okay. Do you have posh candles in your house?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I want to know if you've ever done this. So once upon a time, I got a posh candle. And they last for ages, by the way, these candles.
Yeah, yeah.
But I lit the candle. Rob was like, you spent what on a candle? And I was like, well, but it lasts for like 6 months, a year. It's fine. I went to light the candle. I just went into the bathroom to pee. By the time I came out, he'd blown out the candle. And he went, you're just burning money. You're just burning money. You're not even in the room. Have you ever done that?
I've never blown a candle out because I think otherwise I'm looking at it going, why have you fucking got this candle? It's never been lit. No. I don't even know if it smells properly. I don't know if this smell is a promise or a reality.
Like I can remember the evening sort of like just like we were watching something on the television, but my eyes would go up and then I'd be concentrating on this candle for a bit and then my eyes would go up. And then this fucking candle. And then she went to the toilet. And while she was at the toilet, I just went.
See, now I would say that's the difference between an LA, maybe Beverly Hills and Stoke-on-Trent. We had
You know what it is? I think it's also a difference between being short of money and not being short of money. Growing up with a frugal mind because you just don't know. I mean, I'm saying this to a man sat in Versace's pajamas.
Yeah, I mean,
so look, obviously, he's changed.
I want to circle back to something, though, because you were talking about, because this was something that I was thinking about when I was thinking about accents and Northern and American. Does it strike you? Because I remember when I came to the UK and I struggled to kind of, I have to say, I understand you perfectly, but when I first came to England, I didn't understand a Liverpool accent. Like Scouse accent was just like, and we'd watch Bullseye. That was like our thing. We'd watch old episodes.
I introduced her to the classics.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there'd be all these different accents, and Rob would quiz me on, like, where is that? And I'd be like, Leeds. He'd be like, no, Birmingham. And we'd go through this whole thing where I was learning the accents. I couldn't believe how many different accents there were, like, 1 mile from each other or 5 miles. There's, like, a completely different accent, where it's, like, America is huge, and there's only, like, 5 accents. Like, did you notice when you moved? I mean, there isn't, like, you can go 500 miles, and the accent's the same. Whereas, like,
absolutely. I drove a car from on my own, took a car from California to New York, stopped, you know, did a drive away where I was delivering this car. And it literally, the difference in accents in that 3,500 miles or whatever it is was minimal compared from Liverpool to St. Helens, which is like 4 miles. It is
Why
ridiculous.
Is that?
And it also comes down to what we were saying before about Peloton. Because Peloton, you've got this genetic positivity of the American accents. You're not going to get an English fella go, come on, lads, get a shift on. Come on. Yeah. Come on, let's get a shift on, everyone. I'm sweating my legs off here. Come on. Yeah.
Happen, oh, I've got pick kids up from school in a minute, so come on. I wonder if it was sort of the reason is that our culture and our country is centuries years old, and like America is like 5 minutes old, really, when it comes to history. And they've grown up on television. Well, I wonder if there was just like a centralized understanding of who they are from
very early.
Like no,
I think that.
Like for me, like if you were to ask another American, where am I from? They wouldn't know. I kind of like, you could tell I'm not from the South. You can tell I'm not East Coast, but you wouldn't know if I'm from Colorado or Arizona or California. I mean, you wouldn't know. Whereas like the English, you can tell if someone's like, you know, like at your... From Henley.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So no, seriously. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But do you think like why, like you say it's the movies and the newness I get, but I feel like even in 1,000 years, if America still exists, would be no difference in the accent.
Yeah, but I think what you've got to remember is it's a new country with all people seeking an identity. And it goes right back to what I was saying when we moved to Winsford. Our identity was the accent, so everyone sought it. In America, you get all of these different cultures merging, wanting to be together, identifying a way of being together, and then making that the common way of speaking. And for us, we went through industrialization where people in communities stayed because that's where the work was, so they never had to leave. So if you were in a cotton mill in St. Helens, you never went into the port to Liverpool. You stayed in the mill. You know, you
that's
stayed
really
where you
point.
Were. And it just kept generations in the same place.
That still happens today. Like, I know people in Stoke that haven't been to the town 3 miles away. You know, still today. Within England, I know where you're from. You know roughly where I'm from. Also, that would come with a bit of a bias in some way about that person from their accents. In America,
we don't have that.
You don't have OEs from, therefore, that is like, you know.
And you don't have the same class system.
It's more a class system in England than America, I have to say. Like, even the stuff with, like, I mean, we were taking the piss about the en-suites and whatever, but, like, I noticed there's almost a thing, like, if you're posh, it's like, ooh, posh kid. Or, like, there's a real thing about posh versus not posh. Whereas we don't really, I think because America is such an aspirational culture, and everyone's trying to, like, it's that place where you go to succeed. So there's no, like, there's no... negativity about like succeeding. I've noticed it's like, did you go to private school or public school in England? Which is like not a conversation you have.
You know, it's a very interesting thing because reflecting on my life changed quite dramatically. There's periods of time where if you come from a working class background, then all of a sudden you go into a profession where, regardless of the notoriety or the fame side of it, where all of a sudden your level of wealth goes beyond your expectation. There's a period, and you may, I don't know whether you would have felt it the same way, Rob, because you were so young, but there is a little bit of you that feels guilty, a little bit about going, oh, I better not, you know. And I've never been flash, I've never been into flash cars or anything, but there is when I was in America, I was working for this company, American Soccer Camps, and I remember all the English lads were over, and the guy who's running the camp is a guy called Gary Russell, who set it all up, and he was a psychologist. It was all about coaching and mixing psychology with coaching. Brilliant. But he had this big flash car, and it was all English coaches, and I remember one of the English coaches, because I was thinking of staying there long term and taking a full-time job, and one of the English coaches, we're saying, look, Gary's got a big flash car. I think he had a Porsche or something like that. He said, don't think of it like he's taking money from you because he's got a flash car. Think of it that you want to work for the guy whose company is doing so well. He's got a Porsche. That's how Americans see things. Don't look at it in English way.
Mate, listen.
It was exactly, exactly.
Like, I'm only now, as a 46-year-old, giving myself permission to be the person that has been this successful. It's something that I battled with for a really, really long time. And, like, if a posh car, not that I would do it, but I was with other lads, if a posh car went down the street, some lads would throw bricks at it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, So like I got to like 30 and I always thought people that owned Rolls Royces were dickheads because that's just ingrained. It's like he's a dickhead.
Yeah.
And then somebody took me from the hotel to a gig in a Rolls Royce. And I was like, this is fucking ace. I'm going to have to change them, right? So then I thought, then I couldn't weigh my desire to have one of those things against the person that I was and that I'd come up being. So I sort of grappled with it for 10 years about liking Rolls Royces, but not wanting to get one because that would make me a dickhead. And then on my 40th birthday, I was just like, fuck it, I'm going to get one. And I went down to go and get a Rolls Royce and either had spent some money on a present for me. And I got
like a minimal amount too.
It wasn't a lot.
It wasn't a lot.
And I got really angry with her. And I was like, how can you buy that when I'm going to buy this Rolls Royce?
He got really, really pissed off at me. It was like a nice pair of pajamas and a snow globe. And he got so angry that I'd spent money on a nice pair of pajamas and a snow globe. They actually didn't get the car for himself because he felt too guilty and apologetic.
You have two things. It was either pajamas or a Rolls Royce.
Yes.
Not both.
Not both. He's
anyway,
mega mad.
Listen.
It took him two more years.
It took me two more years to build up the courage in myself to go and get one. So I got one and I drove it off the fourth. Well, I was in the back of it off the forecourt. And I was on my phone.
You went to the Daily Mail.
I went to the Daily Mail and I was just looking through a few stories. Kylie Jenner, who was 19.
No, she was 16, babe.
Oh, she was 16, had got the exact same car.
That day, in the same color, and it was her third.
She had no existential crisis about getting that car. Do you know what I mean?
Have you still got it?
He got a new one.
Yeah, but what I mean is, do you still have a Rolls Royce? You're happy with it?
Yeah, he's happy with it, but I mean, you said one day it was like, because I'd never heard of it because I kind of come from this American culture, but you said kind of the same thing. You said in England, people look at a guy with a nice car and they go, in America, you see a guy with a nice car and you go, one day I'm going to be that guy.
Yeah.
And you see that guy with the car and you go, one day I'm going to get that guy.
I'm gonna get that bastard.
It's interesting though. Like, why do you think? Why is it like that? Why is there such a like?
I think it does. And again, I'm basing all of this on no academic knowledge whatsoever. But I do think the class structure's got a lot to do with it. And the reason for that is that there's in America, because it's a new country, because it's the land of opportunity, because people come. And at some point, the difference between where everyone's starting from is relatively close.
Equal.
In Britain, you have centuries of division and centuries of family wealth and centuries of serfdom. So you end up with a situation where there's resentment because the person who's got that Rolls Royce probably
didn't earn it.
And the person who's filling them up with petrol at the station would never have had the opportunity to do it. So it's less of a meritocracy. If you've earned it, if you've won it, if you've done great, but if you just got born into it, I'm going to hate you for the fact that I wasn't.
Yes. Yeah, so that's the presumption.
But I mean, but that being said, with both of you, you've both earned your wealth, your success, and yet I imagine that both you kind of touching on it, and I know you have, I'm sure you receive kind of judgment and backlash.
I'll put it this way. I wouldn't have the Rolls Royce in England. That wouldn't be happening. And now that I've experienced it, I don't want it anymore.
Because he feels too guilty to have something.
No,
but there is that thing as well, isn't it? You want it because you can't have it. You've got it. You go, is it worth it? Does it fulfill the desire I was hoping? But it's still, I get what you're saying. Having it in England is a different statement.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not known for, your, what's the word that I'm after?
Subtlety?
Subtlety, yeah. You're not a shrinking violet, are you? You're known to be flamboyant and confident and out there. And there's an expectation that your level of fame, pop star level of fame, and now beyond that level in terms of being so known for so long by so many, that you could almost get away with stuff now because people know you've done it. It's when people have been, if you like, successful for 5 years and then they're walking around with big gold watches. I think that's more of a resemblance. Elton John, he's got a Rolls Royce, people go, of course, he's fucking Elton John.
You'd also actually be like almost disappointed if he was in like a Toyota Camry. You'd be like,
yeah, then they'd be going, you're actually a bit woke. You don't mean that. You're just doing it.
You're insincere, you bastard.
Yeah.
Fuck off with your Prius.
Fuck you.
Yeah. What are you being ordinary for, you Bella?
Yeah. He's putting it on.
It is such an English thing that, like, you can't, you kind of can't win.
But you know, it's also part of what I think makes our humor and our culture so good is that it undercuts.
That undercut. 100%. It was like, it's like that joking. You can joke with someone in the UK and in America. You can't really, like, I think if you had this conversation with someone who was American, like not me, who's been in Europe, they would be very confused by the concept. They wouldn't even understand it. They wouldn't, like, if we were talking to the Kardashians right now, I'm not sure they would understand why you would even need to apologize for showing your wealth. It would be like mind blown. It would completely go over their heads.
I think that's something that we can learn from. And I don't mean that exposing your wealth is good.
To that level, no.
Yeah, but I think what we shouldn't be afraid of is showing success, because if you can show success there and be comfortable in your own skin and success itself be regarded as a positive thing, then it will teach people from backgrounds like ours that it's available to you. We're not freaks, we're not odd, we just follow this thing and that thing and then put the work in at the right time, and then you've got an opportunity to do it. I'm not into that. Yo, if you want it enough, you can have it. Because that's bollocks. You've got to really work at it and have some talent. But if you can recognize that in yourself, you should believe you've got a chance to do it.
I think that's a problem with, like, Britain is people think that what we've achieved is literally like jumping to Mars by yourself. It would never happen. And it can. You know, it can. And I think you're right. That is a thing that we can learn from our American brothers and sisters, that success is actually okay and it's doable. But you're right, you've got to work for it. You've got to put the graft in.
Well, yeah. I think it was really interesting the way you said it was merit-based versus class-based, which I think is a really important point in terms of, you know, I think there is, of course, there's resentment when someone's something and you can't break through that barrier. You know, they just keep getting wealthier and wealthier by just being born.
Whereas, and that's also not their fault.
And it's not their fault. I have to say, with lots of, I'll put in air quotes, you know, posh people I've met in England, they're almost apologetic about having been born into it. Do you know what I mean? They're quite lovely. That's not to say that all of them are, but it's not their fault.
I would say most of them are.
It's not their fault.
I'm sort of like shocked when I knock about with Aristos and their Aristo friends, sort of how soft, I mean, you know, they have had privilege, but they are soft and gentle and not chippy.
Wait, I just want to do something because I know we've kept you for a really long time and I've really
enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it. It's been
great. Okay, one thing I wanted to do, which is total non sequitur or whatever, is I wanted you guys to each tell me in your own colloquial accent something, an expression, and I want to try and copy it. And then on the reverse, I want you guys to try an LA American accent and see how it goes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so who's going to go? Do you want to? Okay. John, you tell me something. You say something in a Liverpool Scouse accent, and I'm going to try and say it the same way.
Okay. I think Robbie is a great lad, but sometimes he's a bit of a blur.
I think... I can't even say... Okay. I think, do it one more time. Okay, wait, do it one more time.
I think Robbie is a great lad, but sometimes he's a bit of a blurt.
I think Robbie's a great lad, but sometimes he's a bit of a blurt.
Wow.
I said it's Scottish.
That was Scottish.
That's terrible. I can't do it.
That was not about Scottish.
It was horrible.
That wasn't bad. Blech,
great, 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 blurt, blurt. I can't do it. Okay, you do a Stoke thing.
Okay. Cosney kick a bow again a woe, and yet we yet until
you bosses. Shut up, I can't say that. kick a bow.
Oh, hold on.
Okay.
Cosney kick a bow again a woe, and yet it with the yet.
It's like Christo e Cymru. I'm never going to remember that. Just okay. Do it bit by bit.
All right, how about this? Coslive cam slice.
Coslive cam slice.
Coslive cam slice.
Coslive cam slice.
Which means, do you live in a council house?
Oh, right, very good.
Coslive cam slice.
Okay, I'm going to make you guys now say, I've really enjoyed talking to you. You're both great guys.
Hey, I really enjoyed talking to you. You're both great guys.
Okay,
you got that. Was I chotchy out of Happy Days?
Yeah, you were a bit chotchy.
We went to the 1950s there.
It did do a little backtrack in time. Yeah.
Say it again.
Okay. I really enjoyed talking to you. You're both really great guys.
I've really enjoyed talking to you. You're both really great guys.
Oh, my God.
Okay. That's good.
No, it's not. It's not good.
Thanks,
it's not
John.
Good. You're like in New York. You're like a regressive person in a special place in New York City.
I really...
what are you?
I'm not that Woody like, Allen.
I really...
Yeah, you're a big talking. Woody Allen.
You're Woody Allen.
Can I just say this? My American accent is better, way better than your Scouse.
Okay, my Scouse was terrible. Granted, mine was shite. But I'm going to work on it. And yours is just harder.
Were you doing comedy then? Or was that your actual, like, sincere go at American accent?
Koska Kaboa.
Oh,
sorry. I beg your pardon. Was I doing comedy or was that my sincere go? That was me hoping that there's some casting agent listening to this thinking, that's the guy we need.
That's who I need.
That's the guy. Listen to that guy. That's the guy we need.
Get rid of Channing Tatum. We've got the guy.
I thought that was pretty good.
Because you both think it sounds normal, but
okay.
It doesn't.
So if England needs an American to an English guy,
if you need like a Woody Allen, like kind of like.
Well,
a,
I know it's kind of like that. So hey,
it sounds like you're congested.
Well, maybe I am. Maybe I'm not. Hey, listen.
Okay. I really enjoyed this chat, John, by the way. I could keep you and then I would feel guilty, but I was just you're great. This has been so much fun. Postcards from the Edge. John Bishop, thank you so much for joining this podcast. You are an absolute legend, one of the funniest people I know, and we are all better for it on Postcards from the Edge. Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this episode, please, please subscribe. I mean, it's actually begging. Rate us, review us, all the 5 stars, all the bells and whistles, please, wherever you find your podcasts. Seriously, desperate for a good review.
Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Postcards from the Edge is a Blueprint Pods production.
Executive producer, Sophie Palak.
And producer Warren Borg. Postcards from the Edge.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.